Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say.
Hello and welcome back to Tennis Connected Studios for January 21st, 2018. I'm Nima Gary alongside Carson Sammy, and we're here this week to preview Week 2 at the Open. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours, as well as House of Cards. Carson, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, how are you?
Doing really well.
Been just, you know, late nights, early mornings, grinding, and watching a lot of tennis. Fun. I'm looking forward to, you know, the second week. This is, you know, where it really gets not as many matches, as we all know. We know the song and dance by now, second week of majors, but in terms of you know, the quality of the matches, you know, perhaps they're going to get a little bit better. And let's see how our picks did, right? I mean, that's, you know, that's something that everybody always gets on us about. So, Parsa, just to quickly recap here, we're going to go this week, we're going to talk about, you know, the slew of upsets on the women's side, as well as how, for the most part, the men have held it together at the top of the rankings and gone through. We also review our picks from last week, as I mentioned, and look forward to what's going to unfold in the next 7 or 8 days. And then finally, we want to talk about the heroic efforts of Simona Halep, Tennis Sandgren, as well as Caro Garcia. So, Parsa, without further ado, let's talk about the women's side. So right now, we have Madison Keys, who already went through a little bit earlier tonight. You know, we're Sunday night right now, about 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We just had Madison Keys roll Caro Garcia. Very comprehensive victory by the American. Hasn't lost a set here. Looking great. Did you have her, Parsa? Because I'm looking at my notes. I did not have Madison Keys. Did you pick her?
No, but so far I'm alive. All four.
Okay, great. So, you know, just to recap, on the women's side, I had Pliskova, Sharapova, who got knocked out by Kerber, who's in a dogfight at the moment. Svitolina, still alive. Wozniacki, still alive. As well as Naomi Osaka, who's my dark horse, who's killing it right now. Super happy about that, Parsa. So I'm looking pretty good. Of my five picks, four are still around. And we're heading into Monday now over there. So, and then who did you have?
Just to refresh. So I had, in the top, I had Halep. Then I had Kerber, Svitolina, and Wozniacki, so all alive so far. So who knows? Could end up like that.
Beautiful. So, I mean, for me, it's, I mean, kind of like, I'm happy Kerber is, you know, the Kerber of 2016 so far. Come alive again. She's, you know, a little bit more aggressive. I saw that she created a little bit more of a platform stance on her serve, getting a little bit more, you know, rotation up to it. So it looks like she's cracking that a bit more, because that was a significant weakness for her, especially in 17. So she's come around. She hasn't lost a match yet this year, which is great for her. Kind of upset that she beat Sharapova, not because I had picked Sharapova. I just believe that the star power that Maria brings to the table is, you know, with Serena, especially not here, is like no other. And, you know, for her to go out, it's, you know, it is the way that it is, but, you know, we still have Wozniacki, who's, you know, fighting. She was down 5-1 earlier in the event, but she came back. Halep, who beat Lauren Davis 15-13, close to 4 hours, 3 hours and 45 minutes on the clock for that one. So that was a tremendous effort by her, especially after rolling her ankle in the first round, rolling Bouchard in the second round, and then going on to play almost 4 hours against Davis. So, you know, Parsa, from a whole, you know, an overall standpoint of how the women's draw has unfolded, what are your takeaways so far, and what should we really look forward to as we move over to week two now?
I mean, I think more so than anything, as much as we want to call it upsets, it's I think depth in the women's game is apparent, you know, or for the lack of a better way of putting it, that the top isn't so strong that, yes, you're getting the same person all the time.
Exactly.
And so, you know, we get a different look every time. And although, like, just the fact that I have four women here that are still alive and we're on a Monday, it's kind of, there is a cast of characters that go deep in the tournaments now. And so there's some that can be a surprise. There's some that you kind of know and can rely that they're going to get there.
Yes.
And I think it's great for the sport. I think that's great for women's tennis and in general, because it makes it really exciting. You have your stars, but you also have a plethora of just players that are unknown that can make a name for themselves at any moment. So you get the perfect mix, I feel like.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it was interesting because you kind of said, you know, depth of women's tennis. And I was, and then I was like, oh, okay, I was going to jump in there because I agree that there is, you know, better depth of women's tennis. It just really depends on what you want out of a sport. You know what I mean? Like, are we looking for consistent, dominant figures that will take us to the next level and win 20 Grand Slams, the Federers, the Serenas, the Nadals, you know, the Steffi Graffs? Or are we looking for, you know, the unknown? Wozniacki wins 1 week, Pliskova wins 1 week, Svitolina wins 1 week, Madison Keys wins 1 week, you know, Sloane Stephens. You know what I mean? It's just, it's weird. I mean, I think you need a little bit of both. I think you need the superstars that are winning a lot, but you need perhaps the second tier that's able to challenge them a lot. And I think that's when, in my opinion anyways, you get a really good product. Because right now, you know, last year, how many women were number one in the world on the women's, I think, what, like seven? Every, you know, a lot of ladies shared that spot, right? And, you know, obviously with Serena calling it, you know, after the Australian Open to get ready to give birth and everything. And I think that it's great in some ways. I don't think it's an amazing level of depth that I've seen on the women's side. Hey, same thing could be said for the men's because we still have Roger Federer at almost 37, when, you know, about to maybe win another Grand Slam. So the younger players haven't stepped up. That's apparent. But on the women's side, I feel kind of the same way. I mean, it's, for me, there needs to be some, you know, somebody has to break out here. I mean, Madison Keys, maybe, you know, if she can win this tournament, backing it up with the U.S. Open Finals, I think that would be great. You know, then she's starting to create some momentum. Svitolina, again, as you mentioned last podcast, you know, she was the most consistent player last year in terms of winning a lot of events, being in the mix, but not being able to, you know, close the door when it really counted in the four majors. It's still a lot of work to be done, but I think you need a little bit more of that. And like I said, I'm eager to see how the rest of this event unfolds. I mean, again, Kerber's a two-time slam winner. If she gets through today, she's going to go through and see how she does. Wozniacki's still around. Svitolina. Really like what I'm seeing from, you know, Naomi Osaka. I mean, she's just such a character. Has that really dry sense of humor. And she doesn't take herself seriously, but she works hard, very talented. You know, hits a huge ball. And it's going to be interesting for me to see how you know, she comes up in this event and goes forward. But yeah, I mean, so from what you have now left in this event, how do you see, are you sticking with what you have, or are you giving it a little bit of room because you've seen now everybody play three or four matches? You know, do you see that still unfolding the same way for you, or are you ready to change it up a little bit?
Yeah, no, I'm keeping it exactly the same because the reasons that I believed in them from the beginning were because they were battlers and battle-tested, and they point in and point out are the most consistent players. Now, Kerber, she looked like her old self in the warm-up tourneys. And so, you know, I had a little bit of faith that she'd return, and there's no pressure anymore because she stinks and her ranking's so low. So yes, all that is removed. And now she plays great again, of course, because she doesn't, you know, it's the pressure that's too much to overcome. So right now she's still just the underdog, and all anyone can talk about is, you know, she's playing like the player she was in 16, you know, that it's like, so everything's still compared to her last year, which was so much more dramatically different than the year before that. So, yeah, I'm staying right there, Nima. What about you?
Man, I think that from what I'm seeing, I think Madison Keys is going to be tough to stop here unless she has some sort of, like, something happens. She freaks out or whatever. I mean, I have Pliskova, Sharapova's out. Kerber's in her place for where I had it. And I have Svitolina and Wozniacki. It could happen. It's not going to be easy. But I'm going to, I mean, listen, I wish I had taken, you know, Madison Keys to do something here. I'll stay with what I have. With Svitolina winning this event over Pliskova in the finals, but I think it's going to be still very interesting as you know, the tournament unfolds for the rest of the week. So, Parsa, before We get into the men's action. We want to talk a little bit about an interesting issue that unfolded a little bit towards the end of last week in Australia, which was the weather. So this is an outdoor tournament, even though, you know, Melbourne Park has the potential to have three indoor facilities. On I think all of their courts have, all of their main stadiums have roofs. They didn't close them, and it was like, what was it, 69, you know, Celsius out there, 150. It's like some crazy stuff, right? So my question for you is, we're both coaches, so we've both had experiences where we've been out there with players. You know, let's talk a little bit more on the high performance tip, right? Where you got to push them because, you know, they need to excel. We know the rigors of tournament play and what is necessary for them to excel in those atmospheres. But when is enough too much? Because Djokovic came on and said, listen, this is not about being fit. This is not about being anything. There comes a point where this, it goes above, you know, what you need to be even a top flight level athlete, right? So if it's like 60 Celsius on court, should they be playing, in your opinion? What's your call on that overall?
Yeah, I mean, I find it to be challenging.
Yes.
I don't know. Explain it another way, Nima. I want to hear you say it again.
Well, okay, so this is what I was like, and then my point overall is, when is enough enough? You know what I mean? Because you have a situation where, when do we look at, especially Melbourne, right? You know, in Australia, we know the ozone is thinner. It's a very hot country, and you get these crazy days. I remember, you know, a few, like, what was it, 97, 98, Sampras was out there, he was playing against Mooster, and it was just like 60, 70 degrees Celsius. Or a couple of years ago, Frank Danzig passed out and he said, I saw Snoopy on the court. You know what I mean? He's hallucinating. Whatever, right. Even if he was joking or whatever. But the point is that at what point, like, for me, if you're out there playing at 40 degrees Celsius, I think, you know, at a top level sport like tennis, and you're the only one out there in singles, I think you're doing a pretty good job. That's tough. You know what I mean? Like, if you compare it with other sports, I'm not saying any sport is easy at the professional level, but hockey or, you know, or basketball, where you're indoors, you're not dealing with any conditions. You're dealing with just the sport, right? But when you're out there and you know how much the sun can knock you out, can you blame somebody for not being fit enough to play in 60 degrees? I don't think so, personally. But it is what it is, right? It's the same for both players. We know that song and dance. But I think from an overall, there has to be, I think over 40 degrees, if it's possible, you got to close the roof. That's my humble opinion. And then after you make your next point, I want to just close off with one thing before we jump into the men's.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point of you know, going towards that kind of extreme? I mean,
exactly.
You know, because if someone's cramping when it's 30 degrees or 35 degrees, then you know it's a fitness issue. But at 40 degrees, there's just some people who can handle heat better than others. It has nothing to do with their conditioning.
Yes.
So, you know, that does draw a line. I mean, it's also not fun to play in. I've played in extreme weather. It's really not fun to play in. It's true. It's a test and all that kind of stuff. And but why risk health to play a sport? I don't really understand it. You know, that doesn't really make sense, and
sure.
So it shouldn't push the body until, you know, the body breaks down and can't function anymore. That doesn't sound correct.
Yeah, and you know, just one my second last point here. Look at it. You know, at the end of the day, this is a business, right? And this is a product. So if you're in a position where you're putting your product in debilitating conditions where it can't perform like a Verdasco Nadal semifinal from, you know, whatever, 2009, what's the point, right? Like, all you're proving is, oh, look, player A can just outlast player B at subpar levels and move on to the next round. That, for me, is not an exciting product, right? Because you're not dealing, you're just watching to see who can survive. Kind of like there's like some gladiator ring or what, you know what I mean? And that's, okay, that's fantastic in another way, but it's not, you're not getting a lot of quality in terms of, you know, professional performance, in my opinion. To close off on that, remember watching this, you know, this video with LeBron James, and he was doing this uninterrupted thing that he has. It's like this channel that they have, and he was at this barber shop with Draymond Green and a couple other guys, like 2 Chainz and some other rappers and everything. And they were just talking about like Tom Brady, and they're talking about football and how it's a hard sport. And then LeBron came back and said, the only thing I would argue with that is that in football, you only have to play one thing, like either offense or defense, right? Like when Brady comes out and he plays, you know, the offense, he's the quarterback, then when it's the defensive side, he's not doing anything. They don't even talk. There's no, you know, there's nothing. Obviously, in basketball, you got to play defense, you got to play offense. We know in tennis, you got to do everything yourself, especially in singles. However, in basketball, let's take the NBA, for example. The NBA is only played in the in North America, including here in Toronto, right? You're traveling maximum. Your time zone differential is going to be 3 hours if you go West Coast, if you're in East Coast. You're always playing in the same situation. Like, it's on a hardwood floor. You're in an air-conditioned arena. There's no sun. You're not going to Japan, then Australia, then Dubai, then Toronto, then New York. For me, I'm not just saying this because I'm a tennis guy. You have to put it up there, right up there, as one of the hardest sports in the world. Forget about you not getting a salary and all of this other stuff. And if you're 200 in the world, you're making 20 grand a year. Forget about all that stuff. Just talking about the sheer, you know, the hardness of the sport. For sure, for me, tennis is the hardest sport based on those conditions. And look at us. Let's see all these NBA. I'm not saying they can't do it. But let's see them play outside in Melbourne when it's 60 degrees on a hard court. You think they're going to enjoy that? They're going to be like, what the heck is going on here? But you know what I mean? Put me inside in the gym. You know what I'm saying? So there is definitely the argument for tennis being the hardest sport out there. It's got to be right up, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know if you have anything to, you know.
I mean, it really has to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible for it not to be, so.
Okay.
Definitely agree.
For sure. Okay, Parsa, so as we move along to the second half of our podcast for the men's preview, for our week 2 preview, it's also brought to you by Health IQ. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people, including tennis players, runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. From a tennis perspective, according to a 2007 study in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, tennis players who play twice a week have a 17% lower body fat than the age-matched controls. According to a 1980 study in the Journal of Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, average VO2 max is 40% higher for male tennis players and 32% higher for females. As you can clearly see, there's a lot of health benefits to playing tennis. From a savings standpoint, 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4% and 33% on their life insurance. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/TC or mention the promo code TC, which obviously stands for Tennis Connected, when you talk to a Health IQ agent at the following 1-800-549-1664 number. Okay, Parsa, so as we move into the men's portion of this show, has anything really surprised you? I mean, Roger Federer keeps on trucking along. Nadal had that, you know, mammoth win against Schwartzman, even though it was 4 sets, it was almost, 4 hours? You know, how great is it to see Schwartzman out there, man? I mean, the guy is just grinding. Then we have Djokovic coming back. Lots to discuss here. You know, where do we start? Let's start with our picks. So, Parsa, who did you have as we move into week 2 here, your picks for the event?
Yeah, so at the top I had Nadal.
Yes.
And then I had Ferrer, which is the big, you know, first round exit, tough yes. match. I thought if he had gotten through that, he could have been in this position,
yes.
but not meant to be. And then I had Djokovic and Federer.
Yes.
And as my dark horse, I have Chung.
Beautiful one. That's amazing.
Doing pretty well. 4 out of 5, like the women's side.
Yes.
And although not without hiccups and difficulty, Nadal's match with Schwartzman could have been the match of the tournament. Just really exciting stuff, you know, just great rallies and just tough stuff. Been getting a lot of messages actually on that match alone, so interesting enough. And then Djokovic, you know, with is his hip hurting? Is his elbow hurting? What's happening?
Chung could take him out today, man. It's definitely possible. Because the guy's a super smart player.
It's definitely possible.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see exactly how that all plays out. I mean, it could be Chung's, you know, rise to the, you know, or I guess his announcement to the tour, you know, that he's here to stay. And that's how you do it. You got to beat one of these guys, and it's Chung's turn, perhaps.
Well, he just took out Zverev, who's the number four seed.
Exactly.
So he's doing some damage.
But Zverev is still young. You know, in my estimation, he's not a Djokovic. You know?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So Zverev is very good, but Zverev can play a bad match. You know, Djokovic rarely plays a bad match. And you really have to earn a victory against him, you know?
Yeah.
So
Parsa, before we get into, you know, my dismal picks, which is, I'm not trying to get cocky or anything, but for me, it's very disappointing since I was on a really good streak. You know, I want to talk about Diego Schwartzman just for 1 second, because from a coaching perspective, or, you know, just a tennis perspective, we see this guy is like 5'6", 5'7", right? And, you know, people talk about, well, look, this guy gives everybody hope, even if you're a smaller player. But is it more than that? Like, does he have, you know, the timing and the skill set that, you know, like, there's a lot of, like, Noah Rubin's a small guy too, right? You don't see him doing the same things that Diego Schwartzman's doing. Even though he's been injured, I know a little bit for Noah. But when you have a situation with Diego Schwartzman, what makes him so good? Like, how is he able to hit such a clean ball? Is it practice? Is it talent? Is it combination of everything? What's your overall sense on him as a player? Because, I mean, this guy's, for me, the real deal. He's going to do some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's sort of always been who he is. You know, when you see someone who plays the way they are,
yes,
and the way they've been their whole life, he's exceptional at what he does, and he continues to improve. He's always been underestimated, and he just continues to prove everyone wrong, and there's no end in sight. He's the next Ferrer, Nima, in my opinion.
You know, it's amazing that you said that, because I came out on Twitter maybe about 4 months ago and I said that, and everybody's like, well, look at Ferrer, you know, this guy put up like a screenshot, like Ferrer's like the seventh highest, you know, prize money winner ever. Ferrer was also number three in the world and all of that stuff. And hey, I agree with that. But if you look at this guy, I think he's got a better serve than Ferrer. Ferrer's a couple inches taller. I think he moves just as well. I think he's got a better backhand. Maybe Ferrer has a little bit of a bigger forehand. And maybe he's a, you know, a bigger fighter. But this guy's not that far behind. And to me, it doesn't look like he's a very injury-prone guy. You know what I mean? Like, Ferrer was pretty solid, man. Like, he didn't really... He's still not injured. Yeah, I mean, he was a little bit off a couple of years ago, but then he had, you know, racket issues, and he was all over the place with that. But he's still playing. Semifinals of Auckland, so he's still around. But I definitely think Schwartzman, I don't know if he can get to top 10, because there's a lot of, you know, good big guys coming up, like the Hachinovs, Rublev, you know, Tsitsipas, there's all, Shapovalov, there's so many players. But I think, you know, you're definitely going to see him in the mix. I mean, he's made fourth round here. Court is U.S. Open. Clay is his best surface, so you know he's going to be doing some damage come the springtime on the dirt. So, you know, that's what I think about that anyways. So, Parsa, before we get on to some other storylines, just to give everybody a recap of what I did in terms of my picks, I had Nadal still alive. Kyrgios lost to Dimitrov in an amazing match last night. Four close sets. Very reminiscent of that 2000-2001 Agassi-Sampras quarterfinal at the U.S. Open, where it was like four tiebreakers, and Sampras ended up winning. Not quite the four breakers here. We had three, but still great quality. Djokovic still around. And then we had Delpo, who got destroyed by Burdick, who's right now playing against Fognini. So, you know, that's kind of what I have. And then obviously I have Delpo and Kyrgios in the finals. Kyrgios winning, which is completely not going to happen. So best I can do, and I had Kokkinakis as my dark horse, who lost first round. But so best I can do is get two semifinalists and Nadal and Djokovic, which I'll take at this point if I can get it. But anyway, so what else have you seen overall in this event? Mr. Roger Federer, what's your thoughts on RF? How's he going to do here?
Yeah, I mean, I think he...
Is he going to win it?
Yeah, I don't have him winning anymore, so... No. I don't think he could win it, but yeah. I, you know, do have him being wounded a little bit by Djokovic, and I'm not sure that'll happen. I'm not sure Djokovic can get there, so we'll see exactly how that plays out. But I think that this is Nadal's tournament to win. I think that practice that I saw before the tournament began was truthful. because he's all he's doing, you know, he's doing it all over again. It's lining up perfectly for him. He's raising his level. He's trying to improve each match, and he is. And so I think he's going to be top form come week two with very little wear and tear. He had a nice little test with Schwartzman. He had a ton of balls, lots of rhythm, lots of things to gain confidence over. And I think now it's a better watch out the rest of the field.
But we got to talk about this because, so what, you know, difficulties does Marin Cilic pose for him as they move forward? Just Parsa, just quickly before he answers that, right now I have Burdick up 6-1, 6-4 on Fognini. So it looks like, you know, everything that you can see Thomas back in the quarterfinals of a Grand Slam, which for him is massive because he looked terrible at the beginning of the year as well as last year. It looks like he's regaining some of his mojo. But anyways, so go ahead with the other stuff, please.
Yeah. You know, we'll see how it all plays out, but
yeah, with Cilic and Nadal. Yeah.
Nadal is just, you know, he's just hitting the ball so well and he's just going to continue to grow into just hitting the ball exactly where it is. And so when it goes with Cilic in the next round, you know, he's going to come at him with big shots and I think could have been very disruptive to Rafa in round 2 or 3 where he's not locked in, but I think him locked in, he's able to hold serve a little bit easier, and he's just able to run people around and make them feel pain. His ball bounces so high that, you know, he's really able to play different angles and to hit the ball in such a fashion that it makes it a very, very physical type thing. And so for a guy like Cilic, who doesn't want that ball 2 or 3 inches out of his ideal strike zone, he's going to have to muscle the ball a little bit more. And then I think over time, Even if Cilic wins a set, I still think Nadal is going to overcome him, even if it's in 5 sets. Mm-hmm. So I think the longer it goes, the more it favors Rafa. So Cilic would have to play, you know, the match of his life pretty much in order to get by in this match.
And then as we look from there, we have Dimitrov, who came through, as I had mentioned, an amazing match with Kyrgios, to play Kyle Edmund, who again has been playing pretty solid, man, the last couple of years, pretty underrated in majors. He's going like relatively deep, winning 2, 3, 4 matches in the last few majors. So he's coming in, took out Seppi in 4, has Dimitrov. Do you feel that, you know, it was amazing because not only had I picked, you know, Kyrgios to win this event and go deep, I think he put up, I mean, he had 36 aces. He pretty much did everything that he could to win that. And Dimitrov did not look good earlier in the event. His sliced backhand was all over the place. And, you know, Nick had come off of beating him in Brisbane on the way to that title. So do you look at this now and say that, you know, against Kyle Edmund, it's just going to be a walk in the park? Or do you see that being, in, you know, a competitive match? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kyle Edmund, Dimitrov, everyone's, you know, applauding him because he's not playing well and he's advancing. But I look at it as alarming. He's not playing well. So if someone's able to match that grit, which all the top guys have, I think he'll lose. But that being said, I think he still can beat a guy like Kyle Edmund, who's still building his confidence and doesn't necessarily believe all the way down when it really counts. And mm-hmm. I think Grigor is now there, but I just don't think his game is there. So I think he'll fall to Nadal in the next round.
Yeah,
I think he'll pass through Edmund and then be out against Nadal.
I just think that at this, you know, when if Nadal is healthy, which right now it looks like he is, it's a very tough proposition unless you're going to go Federer, you know, Australian Open Finals of last year and pretty much all the year where he played Rafa and just hit that backhand early. I don't think Dimitrov has that shot. At least he hasn't shown me that he has. So for that reason, I would agree with you that whatever happens, Nadal will get through that and probably make the finals here at the very least. Now we have this very interesting, you know, a player we have talked about right now, perennial challenger player by the name of Tennis Sandgren. So he beat Wawrinka earlier in the event. He's, you know, facing off against Dominic Thiem. How do you feel that that's going to unfold? Do you think Thiem's going to take him to the woodshed? Or is there any hope here, man, for your American hope here, Parsa, to, you know, to advance? What do you think?
It's a fabulous run. You know, he's playing great tennis. He's going to give himself an opportunity. But, you know, this has been, besides tennis, you know, just kind of a massacre for American tennis. And really nothing, you know, that much to look forward to besides, you know, a perennial challenger player. You know, maybe he's going to enter at the top. You know, but, you know, as everyone knows in America, we're looking for the next champion. And I'm not sure that that guy is tennis sanguine, but, you know, it's a great story. You'd love to see him go all the way and make it a Cinderella story. I mean, yes. That'd be amazing. Or even a much deeper run. Maybe it's starting to upset some of these bigger players, but the likelihood is very low. You know, we'll see. We'll see how much work he actually put in the offseason to see if he even has the fitness to give his tennis level the opportunity. That'll be the true test.
I believe so as well. And then we have, you know, a situation where I think the Chung Djokovic match, which will be overnight tonight around 3 in the morning Eastern for us, is going to be a situation where I think if Djokovic is healthy, he's got through some, you know, his hip ailment as well as his elbow problems, then he's going to, I think, cruise. Or not cruise, but he'll win maybe 4 sets. But I think if he's in any way hindered, Chung's exactly the type of guy who could take advantage of him and make you know, the quarterfinals here, and I think that would be amazing. But that's going to be an interesting one for me to see too. And then it looks for all that Burdick is going to get through Fognini. He's up 6-1, 6-4, 2-1 as we say this. And then we have Federer. I mean, so for Federer to make the finals here, he might get Burdick next. He's got the Hungarian, how do you say this name, Parso? Pukovic? I think so, right? And so if he's going to destroy him, not because I don't think the guy's good. I've seen him play. He's going to be, I think, overwhelmed. I think Federer's going to roll him. It's coming up shortly, I think, after the Kerber match here. And then, you know, he's had Burdick's number throughout their career. So you'll get through that. If Chung wins, you know, imagine it's like a Chung-Dennis Sandgren and then Dennis Sandgren against Federer. I mean, Federer is making the final. I think at this stage, unless Djokovic can go into, you know, old Djokovic, we're going to see another Fedal final here. Amazingly enough, I would never have guessed that to start off 2018. For me, it's even more surprising than 2017, believe it or not. Because
that's what I had, right?
Yeah. Well, we know you had it. But I'm saying for me personally, because I thought that, you know, Nadal was going to come in a little bit jaded. Federer would have all of this pressure. But Federer made an amazing point. He said that if he can hold true to this, he goes, I'm just playing loose, man. You know what I mean? I'm going to come out there and just hit the ball. And if he can do that with his immense amount of talent, fitness now, and experience, which is unparalleled in the men's game, I mean, for sure he's probably going to win the tournament. Unless Rafa can pull it out. And I mean, this could just end up to be an amazing... It would be cool, though, to see Nadal win this tournament. Because
I think he is, you know, yeah, that's who I got.
Yeah, and I would, you know, even though I have nothing against Federer, I would be happy for Nadal, because even though he won the U.S. Open, he won the French, he'll hold 3 of the 4 Grand Slams, you know, he'll have 2 of everything, which I think he'll be the first guy since Rod Laver, just to end off here, and, you know, he'll avenge, you know, 4 or 5 straight losses to Federer, and he really...
And more than that, Nima, it's Australian Open, that makes it 2 Grand Slams away. Yeah. Then you know he's going to win the French Open. That makes it 1 slam away. With 1 slam away with Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, what an amazing end to the year.
Yeah. There you go. That's a great point. I didn't even think of that. So, Parsa, if you have nothing else to add, I think we're going to wrap it up for this week and then, you know, get ready to watch some tennis and then hit everybody back up next Sunday as we review the event and then get ready for the spring season in Miami and Indian Wells. You got any closing words for us?
No, just great job. It was fun, and I look forward to seeing how this all unfolds.
Okay, perfect. So with that said, Parsa and I, as I mentioned, we'll be back next Sunday to wrap up the 2018 Australian Open. In the meantime, you can follow Parsa at ParsaSammy, myself at Tennis Connected. Make sure to also follow us and like us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes. And finally, big shout out to Grand Slam Tennis Tours for anybody looking to get down to the rest of the majors during the year or the other Masters 1000 events. Make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours and Top Notch Tennis Tours. And finally, big shout out to Health IQ. Thanks again. Be good, everybody. Enjoy the tennis tonight and talk soon.